This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, August 16th, 2005. The London Bombings, Unraveling the Official Fiction. An official fiction it is, even noted as such by the official press, the bourgeois press. Myths about the bombings, writes Jason Beneteau in The Independent in Great Britain on August 13th. August 15th in the New York Times, Questions Unanswered in the London Investigation by Alan Cowell and Raymond Bonner. July 27th in the New York Times, Police Debate If London Plotters Were Suicide Bombers or Dupes. July 12th, Bombs in London Are Now Called Military Quality, after the London police had called them bathtub products. An article by Don Van Natta Jr. and Elaine Sciolino. Again and again, over and over in the official press. And then, from Serbiana, on Wednesday, July 13th, London bombing explosive traced to Balkan Muslim extremists. They can't get the story straight. The London bombings, unraveling the official fiction. Let's look first at some of the myths mentioned by Jason Beneteau on August 13th in The Independent. Myth 1, Harun Rashid Aswat, a British-born Muslim who grew up in West Yorkshire, was reported to be the mastermind behind the July 7th suicide bombings and had been arrested in Pakistan. Reality, he was never in Pakistan, but was eventually detained in Zambia, and Scotland Yard does not view him as a key player in the July 7th attacks. More on Harun Rashid Aswat in our program with the revelations by John Loftus. 2, the myth. A known terrorist was widely reported to have slipped into Britain to, quote, mastermind the July 7th London bombings. Reality, notes Beneteau, the man was an innocent Pakistani with a similar name to a suspected Al-Qaeda figure on a watch list of foreign security agencies. 3, myth. Police had identified a fifth suicide bomber connected to the July 7th team who was caught on the closed-circuit TV at Luton Railway Station, but who was never seen again. Reality, no one was identified as a fifth member. 4, myth. One or two of the men alleged to be responsible for the July 21 attacks were at a whitewater rafting center at the same time as two of the July 7 suicide bombers, Shahzad Tanweer and Mohammed Sadiq Khan. Reality, it is now thought to be a case of mistaken identity. 5, myth. U.S. intelligence claimed Jermaine Lindsay, who allegedly carried out the King's Cross attack, was on a British watch list. Reality, the fourth bomber was wrongly identified in the U.S. as Lindsay Germain, who had a similar name to the suspect. This is just a few of the myths mentioned by Jason Beneteau, who doesn't really go into the real myth, the false flag nature of the events of July 7th and July 21st. As we here on Taking Aim over the last number of weeks have been exposing the London bombings and unraveling the official fiction. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the piece by Beneteau in The Independent summarizes virtually all of the central data that had been advanced by the authorities with respect to the London bombings. The myth regarding Harun Rashid Aswat, the Muslim who was born in Great Britain and grew up in West Yorkshire, and was again, as you say, identified as the mastermind behind the July 7th suicide, has to be borne in mind that Harun Rashid Aswat was described as having been an Al-Qaeda central figure, second virtually to Osama bin Laden himself, long involved in attacks in many parts of the world, and as the Beneteau article establishes, this man was never in Pakistan, had no actual role as a terrorist, but was a long-standing agent of MI6, which we will deal with in a moment. The police, as you say, in identifying a fifth suicide bomber connected to the July 7th team, who was supposedly caught on close-circuit television. He has never been seen again, and he was established as having no relation to these events at all. But more significantly is the photograph that was advanced by the authorities of the young men who were supposedly the suicide bombers at Luton City railroad station on their way supposedly to London. Let's look at the photograph, which has been enhanced now, and in its enhancement, subjected to careful analysis.
Ralph, the analysis, the photo analysis, was done for breakfornews.com and wagnews.blogspot.com.
The haversack that was ascribed to the putative suicide bombers, a crude job, and it is clearly drawn in. It is not a real bag. A half leg. How does the man walk at all? When you blow up the photograph, you see that he has only a half of one leg in this photograph. The iron face. The bars should be behind, but in fact the bars, the crossbars, are in front of the face. Does he have a face at all? It's been drawn in. The bar split. Two ends of the crossbar don't match. They don't line up. A crude superimposition. The split too. Same problem with the other identified figure. A twist in the space. The face blur. This face has been darkened and blurred to obscure its features. And this is a question here of doctoring a photograph. The ghost bar. Part of the crossbar is behind the person. Part of the crossbar is in front of the person.
Ralph, we should mention that this is the closed-circuit television image that the police revealed of the supposed four bombers when they first gathered at Luton. The police claimed they had a photo also of them dispersing at King's Cross Station, but they never revealed that photo.
And then there's what is called the something. What is supposed to be part of one of their bodies is an anomalous black square area, colored in, the body interrupted. Then there is the clown foot. One of the feet on one of the people is like one of these rubber clown feet, a huge foot with enormous halo around it. Then there is what is called the floater. It is so heavy with a white reflection that it obscures what would otherwise be a face. And then there is the peg leg. One of them must have a serious fracture, since part of the leg is missing and at an angle that is indicative of it being broken in two pieces. The shadow. The wall shadow is such that the light would have to come from behind. Unless the laws of physics were reversed that day, the light cannot be both in front and behind at the same time. The square nose. One of these individuals must have walked right into a door and flattened his nose. Every aspect of this photograph, this closed-circuit television photograph, on the basis of which these four young men were placed together, presumptively at a given railroad station on their way to King's Cross, the underground, a fake photograph, the official spin. The key evidence of the movements of the four alleged suicide bombers came from this single closed-circuit television image of similar-looking individuals, we were told, entering Luton Station to catch a London-bound train. But the police, who had claimed to have a closed-circuit television video of these four young men arriving at London and then splitting up at King's Cross and heading in different directions to carry out the attacks, not a single image has ever been produced. Here is what was produced. Papers identifying these people were found at the scenes, just like the magic passport that floated down from the wreckage of the World Trade Center. The intact identity papers are presented by the authorities as having emerged from the satchel carrying the bomb that decimated the cars that broke bodies into pieces and scattered bits of flesh all over the cars that absolutely collapsed the cars themselves, but there intact are the identity papers of these four young men.
Ralph, the New York Times is even raising questions. As I mentioned, Alan Cowell and Raymond Bonner on August 15th, questions unanswered in London investigation, point to the fact that, quote, investigators now doubt their early estimation that the two groups of attackers had an organizational link to Al-Qaeda, a senior British official said, police official, and that the attackers might have taken their inspiration from Al-Qaeda. Nor have investigators identified any outside mastermind or any evidence of an operational link between the groups of attackers, end quote. I mention this because in the first days, particularly, they said that the there was a claim that the July 7th bombing was done by the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade. Then the Boston Globe earlier, much earlier, a year ago, had an article, March 17th, 2004, more than a year ago, group tying itself to blast may not be real. Now, this is referring to the Madrid train bombings. And what the Globe exposed was that the group purporting to be part of Al-Qaeda that claimed responsibility for the Madrid train bombings and warned of a looming attack on the United States is a phantom organization, according to U.S. intelligence officials and so-called terrorism specialists. The Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade, which had sent an email to the London-based Arabic newspaper, specialists who were interviewed by the Boston Globe said unequivocally that there is no evidence that the organization exists. Now, the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade first surfaced in July of 2003 and has claimed to be the be responsible for many of the false flag terrorist operations. And here we have the Boston Globe acknowledging that it doesn't exist. Also, as you recall, the British and U.S. intelligence were saying that the there was a link between the Pakistani origin of the July 7th so-called alleged bombers and the fact that they had been to Pakistan and had studied in various madrasas. But soon afterward, July 25th, General Pervez Musharraf, Pakistan's military ruler, said that there are no Al-Qaeda sanctuaries in the northern tribal region bordering Afghanistan, that they had all been destroyed, that Pakistan had arrested 700 of the remaining fighters. This was also backed up by the Pakistani Prime Minister, Shaukat Aziz. He said his country had no links to the deadly bombings in London and also the bombings in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. As you remember, the Egyptian government also first tried to foist the bombings in Sharm el-Sheikh onto Pakistanis, and later the Egyptian government, members of the Egyptian government, started investigating the ties to the Mossad. But on August 12th, in Newscom on the Internet, a report from the Behran report quotes Pakistani Prime Minister Shaukat Aziz saying there is no link with Pakistan. Ralph.
Let's look a moment at the Boston Globe piece that you cited, Maya, because this is a great deal of significance, since it both exposes the nature of the Madrid operation as it does London, but also, as we will be broadcasting next week, and we'll refer to it at the end of this program, the American intelligence authorities and Homeland Security are asserting that a major attack is being planned in the United States for September 11th and September 19th, an attack that will dwarf the events in Madrid and London, that will involve biological agents. And the organizations that are being cited as preparing these attacks include the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade. Let's look at this. A group purporting to be part of Al-Qaeda that took responsibility for the Madrid train bombings and warned of an imminent attack on the United States, is a phantom organization, according to U.S. intelligence officials and terrorism specialists who spoke on the assurance of anonymity. In a 24-hour news cycle dominated by fear of terrorism, the latest email from the Abu Hassan Masri Brigade to a London-based Arabic newspaper sowed anxiety and drew instant headlines all over the world. I'm quoting now from the Boston Globe. But experts have established that this organization does not exist. Email messages purporting to be written by the group, which had claimed responsibility for everything from the North American blackout to a suicide attack that killed 20 Italian policemen in Iraq, none of this proved to be the work of this organization. Intelligence specialists acknowledge. The latest message warned that the attack against the United States is 90% ready. Employees at the Al-Quds Al-Arabi newspaper in London, which received letters in recent months from this group, state they have no idea what this group is. Deciphering the group, which first surfaced in July 2003, establishes that the group is in fact a front for intelligence organizations themselves. Terrorist analysts acknowledge that this is a psychological warfare and propaganda campaign initiated not by anything remotely linked to something called Al-Qaeda. Indeed, it is an intelligence operation, and, quote, it goes to the virtual nature of Al-Qaeda, said Peter Bergen, a terrorism specialist at the New America Foundation. This is psychological warfare. Indeed, what we are in the presence of is exactly what we have described from the inception, a false flag operation. Now, let's take a look for a moment at what DEBCA, which is the Mossad's operation and information service, states about the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade. This is on July 26, 2005, after the London bombings, both the so-called dud bombing and the original. Quote, the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade, responsible for the two London bombing attacks, has published a fresh warning on July 25th. After London, it is Rome's turn. The Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has warned that by failing to withdraw Italian troops from Iraq, he will, by his own hand, turn Rome into a graveyard. The statement, which is run on the Internet, threatens the Italian capital with harsher and more painful strikes than the London attacks. As long as a single Italian soldier remains in Iraq, you, the Prime Minister, will look forward to nothing but more and more blood. And DEBCA file adds, all the European capitals and the United States itself have been placed on a notice, and their security and emergency services are on maximum terror alert. London, too, is bracing for more terrorist attacks, and one of the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade's prime targets is the Vatican, which the terrorist organization sees as a world center of heresy. An earlier warning by this group gave Denmark, the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, and Italy until July 5th to act before the nascent attacks are placed in operation. Here you have it. The very orchestrated adumbration of inevitable attacks, next again in London, in Italy, in the Vatican, across Europe, and specifically in the United States, which later we will see are being projected for September 11th and September 19th, are being ascribed to a group which has been acknowledged and established to be a front for intelligence organizations, a fictive group, other than the intelligence agency PSYOPs operations themselves.
Ralph, as Ben Vensky, CEO of Intel Center, a private company that specializes in analyzing terrorist messages for government agencies, said, the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade started claiming responsibility for just about everything in the world. It's important to then listen to what he next said. We've never been able to determine if it's just one person sitting at a computer having fun, or if it's really is a group. And yet, despite Ben Vensky, CEO of Intel Center, specializing in analyzing messages for government agencies, stating that it is a phantom organization. We have DEPCA, and we have, again, the press throughout the world at first, claiming that the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade was responsible for the London bombings. And then the story changed. Let's look at something we mentioned early on about the London bombings and the so-called bomb makers. And that was how they had gone and studied in the madrasas in Pakistan. Yet, we had quoted, Shehzad Tanweer was enrolled in our madrasa, they, according to the... Shehzad Tanweer was enrolled in a madrasa, according to British intelligence. But when the Mail and Guardian, one of the British press, went and spoke in Pakistan to the head of the madrasa, Azadullah Farooq, who's the son of the madrasa leader, Pir Saifullah Khalid, he stated, "We have no knowledge that anyone with the name Shehzad Tanweer was enrolled in our madrasa. The allegation is baseless. We do not entertain foreign students. We only have Pakistani students." And Lashkar-e-Taiba also denied that Tanweer visited campus formerly linked to the group in Muradik near Lahore. "We have checked our records. No one with this name and with British nationality ever stayed here." Lashkar-e-Taiba was blamed for sheltering Al-Qaeda fugitives who fled from Afghanistan after the collapse of the Taliban regime, that is, the overthrow by the U.S. invasion of the Taliban. And here we have the heads of these madrasas stating that these so-called suicide bombers who were supposed to have studied at these madrasas, that they were never present there. And this is true of the others when the press went and spoke to the leaders of these madrasas. Ralph.
Al Jazeera, July 20th, 2005. A man widely accused of being the mastermind behind the London attacks by slipping into Britain is an innocent Pakistani who happens to have a similar name to that of someone accused of being in Al-Qaeda. The man in his 30s, the subject of intense media reportage surrounding his visit to Britain and culminating his flying out of London one day before the attacks, his unmonitored presence in the country, leading to statements that MI5 had failed to detain him. But according to the Independent, the suspect had no relation to these events and no role whatsoever in the attacks. Inquiries have been led to the discovery that the man is an innocent Pakistani traveler who simply happened to have a name similar to someone else who was accused and placed on a watch list by foreign security agencies. A similar method was revealed in relation to claims by U.S. intelligence that Jermaine Lindsay was the alleged bomber who carried out the King Cross attack and was on a British watch list. The fourth bomber was wrongly identified as Lindsay Jermaine, someone with a name similar to the accused. Scotland Yard is concentrating its efforts on determining the movements of these four people from Leeds and Aylesbury. Concentrating its efforts on people whose identity bears no relation to those who are accused.
Another important aspect to look at, and this is a prime myth, is that the bombs were, they changed the story. The first story and the important story and what we consider to be the real story is that the bombs were of military origin. Jason Beneteau, who is the crime correspondent for The Independent, wrote on July 11th, right after the Thursday attack, the 7/7 attack. He stated, "The bombs used were of, quote, military origin, according to a senior French policeman sent to London to help in what has become the biggest criminal investigation in British history. Christophe Chabot head of the French Anti-Terrorism Coordination Unit, told Le Monde newspaper that the explosives used in the bombings were of military origin, which he described as very worrying. "We're more used to cells making homemade explosives with chemicals," he said. "How did they get them? Either by trafficking, for example, in the Balkans, or they had someone on the inside who enabled them to get out of the military establishment." Chabot noted that the victim's wounds suggested that the explosives were not heavy, but they were powerful, very powerful.
But Maya, there's a particular dimension to what Chabot has said, and it's important to note that he is the head of French Anti-Terrorism Coordination Unit, and that he gave his statement to Le Monde to the fury of American and British intelligence officials. He said, "These wounds are consistent with the bomb being placed underneath. These wounds are consistent with the bombs being placed underneath." In other words, they were not in anybody's satchel. They were not any suicide bomber's bomb. They were underneath, as is in the case of Madrid, placed underneath the carriages of the train. Now, that statement by the head of French counterterrorism is sustained by the reports of eyewitnesses. In fact, the Cambridge Evening News reports about a person named Bruce Late, who is a dance instructor, who was one of the victims of the attack, who describes precisely how the bomb, when it was detonated, killed a woman who fell on top of him, rendered him unconscious, and then as he was staggering out, a policeman pointed to the location of the bomb, a hole underneath the carriage, and the policeman stated to him, and he observed with his own eyes, as the Cambridge Evening News reports, the bomb had been placed underneath the carriage of the train and blew out the floor.
Ralph, it's the Cambridge Evening News of July 25th, 2005. The headline was, "Bomb was under," and they have "under" in all caps. "The train," says eyewitness closest to it. He teaches dance in Cambridge, and he was with his dance partner, Crystal Main. They were the only passengers in the carriage who survived the blast without serious injury. Both of them had bodies flung on top of them, and those people were dead. And the quote, he says, "When I woke up and looked around, I saw darkness, smoke, and wreckage." The policeman that you mentioned said to him, quote, "Mind that hole. That's where the bomb was. The metal was pushed upwards," says Bruce Late, "as if the bomb was underneath the train. They seemed to think the bomb was left in a bag, but I don't remember anybody being where the bomb was or any bag."
And
he has kept to his story. He has said it over and over again. And he refers always in his presentations to the policeman who said, "Mind that hole, that's where the bomb was." And that it is quite clear from the damage that he saw that this was not a satchel bomb, that this would have been under the train. Now, this is a story the press are trying to ignore Bruce Late, but Bruce Late will not let this story die.
But, Maya, it is not just Bruce Late, because the 23-year-old dancer who was the companion of Bruce Late and who also survived is also a witness to the location of the bomb and corroborates exactly what Bruce Late reports and the description by the policeman on the spot. But in addition to that, Mark Honigsbaum of The Guardian, who interviewed other survivors of the bombings in London, gives precisely the same report from his eyewitnesses in The Guardian and in an audio broadcast that was put out over BBC, i.e., the bombs were placed underneath the carriages of the trains and blew out the floors as well as the walls, doors, and ceilings of the trains. And in fact, the impact of the bomb under the train derailed one of the trains and put it in the path of another onrushing train, the consequence of the location underneath the carriage of the train. This is precisely when what we established in Operation Masquerade, the bombings of Madrid, when cell phones detonating bombs supposedly left in satchels were the official fiction, only to have the physical evidence establish that, in fact, these bombs were located underneath the carriages, and it becomes immediately clear. Once you establish that these bombs were located under the carriages of these trains, every aspect of this fiction about these suicide bombers, these young men who are supposed to have left satchels or detonated bombs in their clothing, becomes transparent for what it is, the official cover story for a state operation, because nobody has access to these trains underneath their carriages with 6,000 closed-circuit television cameras there, except the authorities themselves.
We shall return in a moment after the station identification.
Hi, this is Danny Glovin. You're tuned in to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We continue our program, The London Bombings, Unraveling the Official Fiction. Ralph, I had referred to the New York Times, July 12th. Bombs in London are now called military quality, and by Don Van Natta Jr. and Elaine Sciolino. And in it, they refer not just to the French counterterrorism expert, they refer to other officials who said that the material used in the bombs were similar to the kind manufactured for military use or made for highly technical commercial use, such as dynamite used for precision explosions to demolish buildings or in mining. This was military quality, high grade explosives that were used to make the 10-pound bombs. The senior European counterterrorism official who had access to intelligence reports, and although they don't name him, I believe they're referring to the Frenchman Chabot, he indicated that the bombs were technically advanced. This was not rudimentary. It required great organization and was well put together. Now, these stories were going against what the British press, the British government later wanted to put out. And the what we have here on later, Andy Heyman, who's in charge of Scotland Yard's anti-terrorism unit, he is the one who announced that the bombs were 10 pounds, 5 kilograms of explosive material. And that's when they started the putting out that they had been placed on the floors of the trains near the doorways. Now, as we mentioned, the eyewitnesses contradict the Scotland Yard presentation. And Scotland Yard then started to say that these were homemade bombs, because we had here the European and also the Israeli intelligence officials who really understand the nature of the bombs talking about the military quality bombs. Now, this would then point the finger to British intelligence or U.S. intelligence in creating a false flag operation. So we had the police then going to apartments and in Leeds and having raids. And what did they find? They found in a flat in Hyde Park that was linked to Nashar, a chemistry student at the university, who they then caught in Egypt where he was vacationing, and they had the Egyptian government hold him, and he was interrogated for 2 weeks, and the Egyptian government concluded he had nothing to do with the bombings. He was an innocent man. But they said that they found basic ingredients for making bombs, and a forensics explosive laboratory at Fort Halsted in Kent worked to confirm the nature of the material and decided that it was TATP, a recipe that was available on the internet. If you Google, you'll get three recipes, said a senior security official. And TATP is made from common household and other commercial products. Hans Michaels, an explosive expert at Imperial College in London, said that any competent chemistry graduate could make it. Quote, a graduate from a British university who has done organic chemistry will perfectly well understand how to make it, and he could make it. The problem they had with this story about TATP is that TATP is extremely volatile. It would be very difficult to carry it in the rucksack, in the backpack, from Luton, change trains, get on, and still have a stable bomb. It probably would have gone off on its own. And that is why they are having difficulty maintaining their story about the TATP. Also, while they say that any chemistry graduate from a British university or otherwise could have put it together, bomb experts say this is not so. It is very complicated to create a stable bomb. So we have here a major official fiction that is unraveling by the counterterrorism experts. It's being unraveled by the counterterrorism experts themselves.
Maya, you mentioned before the role of British and American intelligence. Let's look at another collateral agency involved in these events. London bombing. Ex-Mossad chief reveals too much. How did the ex-Mossad director, Ephraim Halevi, know that the London bombing, quote, were multiple simultaneous explosions when he wrote in the Jerusalem Post on July 7th, within an hour of the explosion and of the London bombings? How did Halevi reveal so much operational knowledge? Bear in mind that for the first hour and a half, the British authorities insisted that it was a power surge and that there were no bombs involved. It was only after 10:30 that Tony Blair and Sir Ian Blair acknowledged that there was a bomb attack involved, and then they put out the claim that these were a series of sequential bombs separated by 20 and 30 minutes apiece. They were attempting to account for the fact that they were imputing this to young men who arrived at different locations at different times. But Halevi, the head of the Mossad, is stating that there were multiple simultaneous explosions that took place and were the work of perpetrators who, quote, had an operational capacity of considerable scope. He described an operation with which he was familiar, because it was in no way known or asserted at that time that the bombs had exploded simultaneously. Furthermore, there's the additional quote by Halevi, who stated, this required careful planning, intelligence gathering, a sophisticated choice of timing, and near-perfect execution. How did Halevi know the bombings were executed near-perfectly on the same day of the attacks? What were his criteria for this near-perfect execution? Well, let's look at the explanation for this. Here is Aretz Sheva, Israeli National News, on September 21st, 2004. Israeli security to protect London's underground. An Israeli security firm has been selected to arrange all of the security arrangements for London's underground train network. Verint Systems, a subsidiary of Israel's Converse technology that controls all telephonic communications in the United States, announced that Metronet Rail has selected Verint Network Video to control the security of the London Underground, according to an Israeli report. After extensive testing of Verint's network, including installations on selected rail lines, Metronet Rail has been chosen to install the entire underground security system. The system will allow security personnel from Verint of Israel to control passenger platforms and remote portions of the track. I'm quoting from Eretz Shiva, the Israeli National News of September 21st, 2004. Verint President and CEO Dan Bodner told Israel 21, "We have the experience with transportation authorities. We deliver the innovative network and security solutions for the transportation industry. We will monitor, we will control, we will police, and we will take charge." Metronet Rail, a 30-year contract with the United Kingdom government responsible for maintaining the London Underground infrastructure, including security on its trains, stations, tunnels, and bridges. The article concludes, "The London Underground handles more than 3 million passengers a day and is one of the busiest transportation systems in the world." Unquote. Eretz Shiva. Talk about a smoking gun.
Ralph, let's look at the other myth. Harun Rashid Aswath, the 30-year-old British citizen who is being detained, who at first they said was a mastermind, and then British police said he had nothing to do with the bombings. And he was in Zambia. He was detained in Zambia. He was then sent to Great Britain, and the U.S. is requesting his extradition for charges against him of setting up a terrorist camp in Washington. In the article in the Wall Street Journal, August 8th, U.S. requests extradition of London bombing suspect. A judge ordered Harun Rashid Aswath, a 30-year-old British citizen, to be held when his case will resume in a London court. And about Aswath, the extradition hearing that is going to be held is based on accusations that he tried to set up a camp in Bly, Oregon in 1999 to 2000 to provide training in weapons, hand-to-hand combat, and martial arts for people aiming to fight in Afghanistan. And he faces questions in Great Britain about 20 phone calls reportedly made on his South African cell phone, because before Zambia he was in South Africa, to some of the so-called four suicide bombers who killed the 52 people in the 7/7 attack. According to U.S. prosecutor Hugo Keith, Mr. Aswath flew to New York on November 26, 1999, before taking a bus to Seattle, Washington, and then where he was meeting people to set up a camp in nearby Oregon. Senior District Judge Timothy Workman has barred journalists from identifying a British-based Islamic cleric who is also wanted by U.S. authorities on the grounds that it would prejudice the case against the Islamic cleric as well. Now, this is a scenario that's being set up, but a very important interview took place on the July 29th edition of Fox News Channel's Dayside program about Harun Rashid Aswath, pinpointing him as a British intelligence asset. And the person with whom Fox News was speaking is none other than former Justice Department prosecutor and terror expert John Loftus. And this is a very important interview. Steve Watson of InfoWars on August 2nd points to this interview, and the full text is available on InfoWars.net. And I think we should look at some of the statements made by Loftus. Mike Jerrick of Fox News is interviewing him, and he states right off the bat that John Loftus is a terrorism expert and a former prosecutor for the Justice Department. John, so good to see you again. Have you heard anything about Osman Hussein, who was picked up in Rome? And before they talk about Osman Hussein, the real story here has to do with Aswath. And what Loftus says is what's embarrassing for the British is that the British police are out chasing him, and one wing of the British government, MI6, or the British Secret Service, has been hiding him. And this is the real source of contention between the Justice Department and Britain. And that's when they're talking about Osman Hussein. So they have here a British sheikh that the government, one aspect of the government is hiding, while another aspect of the government, the police, are looking for him. So then we move on to Loftus talking about Aswat, Harun Rashid Aswat. And Loftus states right off the bat that he's a double agent. A double agent.
Yes, it's not just that he's a double agent, Maya. And I cannot emphasize enough that the British authorities had stated that the mastermind and the United States Central Intelligence Agency and the authorities in the United States were echoing this. Harun Rashid Aswat was, in fact, the mastermind of the 7/7 London bombings, a top al-Qaeda figure, close ties to Osama bin Laden. And what do we learn here, and what has been established? That since the 1990s, he has worked for British intelligence. He was working for British intelligence in Kosovo. He was working for American intelligence. He was specifically linked to MI6. And now we find that the former MI5 officer, David Shala, has stated that French intelligence sources have corroborated that MI6 had paid a supposed al-Qaeda figure £100,000 in 1995 to assassinate Colonel Gaddafi. The London Independent reported 2 days before the London bombings that MI5 has used al-Qaeda operatives as their own agents, nominal al-Qaeda operatives. Does al-Qaeda even exist? John Loftus went out to spell out that British intelligence and the United States Department of Justice had employed Harun Rashid Aswat in 1999 when he came to the United States. Elements in the Justice Department sought to indict him in Seattle because he was supposedly setting up a terrorist training school in Oregon. But the headquarters of the United States Justice Department ordered the Seattle prosecutors not to touch Aswad and acknowledge that Aswad was working directly for U.S. and British intelligence. He was, John Loftus on Fox News states, a British intelligence plant. All of a sudden, he disappears. He shows up in South Africa. You think he's dead? In fact, the South African Secret Service came across him. The Brits know that the CIA and the MI6 have been employing him. He is, in fact, an instrument of British and American intelligence itself. The mastermind of the July 7th bombings is disclosed on Fox News. John Loftus, as an operative of MI6 and the Central Intelligence Agency, brothers and sisters, false flag.
Ralph, I mentioned that the U.S. judge had said that the should keep quiet the name of the Muslim cleric. The name of the Muslim cleric that they're referring to has been exposed in the press over and again. He's referred to by Loftus as Captain Hook, the imam in London, the Finsbury Mosque, who is missing both his hands. He actually lost his hands and his left eye fighting in Afghanistan. And this is none other than the Egyptian Abu Hamza al-Masri. In the article, again in the Wall Street Journal, August 15th, Politics of Islam, Inside a Major London Mosque, Extremism Shows Tenacity, there is a very big description about Abu Hamza al-Masri and his relationship to the Islamic community in London, especially the Finsbury Mosque. And what Loftus points out is that Harun Aswat was an assistant to al-Masri. It's very important to look at this because, as Loftus had said, the only reason that Haroon Aswad could get away with anything is because he was working for British intelligence. When he goes to Pakistan and the Pakistanis arrest him, he's then released. He goes to Zimbabwe. He's arrested in Zambia. The U.S. wants him. But in fact, the British have been protecting him all along. Aswad was working for British intelligence. British intelligence, over and again, this is the statement of John Loftus.
Well, Maya, let's look at another aspect of this. You'll remember that a bus exploded. The bus was in Tavistock Square. And Paul Joseph Watson of Prison Planet was in contact with an employee of Stagecoach, the company responsible for the majority of London buses. This worker worked a route roughly 1 mile from the site of the bus bombing. The bus driver testified to the following. The number 30 bus was the only bus to be rerouted. Every other bus carried on its normal journey. For some reason, this bus was diverted. The driver notes the following about the closed circuit television maintenance. CCTV, closed circuit television, gets maintained 2 to 3 times a week and can digitally store 2 whole weeks worth of footage. It is done by a private contractor. So when I heard, the worker states, that CCTV was not working on this one vehicle, and that's a bus no more than 2 years old, I knew this was rubbish. I work from the company and I know different. Another point of interest. Last Saturday, an undisclosed contractor came to inspect the closed-circuit television on the buses at the depot. My supervisor informed me that the person spent over 20 hours over that weekend on the CCTV. The person who came was not a regular contractor, and for security reasons, the same few people always come to the depot to carry out the work, but this time it was different. Drivers in the depot think that the so-called bombers had inside help. This was organized. I have received other information that the closed-circuit television is maintained regularly and checked, and the police pay the bus company to check it. A 20-hour inspection session of the closed-circuit television, what was the result? The disabling of the closed-circuit television. The closed-circuit television ceased to function on this particular bus. Now, what's interesting about this is that the media have been drooling over a picture of a supposed suicide bomber, Hasib Hussein, who supposedly had detonated the bus bomb. Well, it's a grainy picture of someone with a rucksack. It bears no relation to the description of the person who was on the bus, who was tall and thin, with good shoes and designer pants, and was in no way dark or characterizable as a person from the Middle East, as the official fiction maintains. The bus driver points out that the number 30 was rerouted, that the CCTV was taken under the control of a company that did not normally handle it, and that it was non-functional.
Ralph, before we conclude today, and we will continue with the London bombings, our discussion, our analysis, our documentation next week, I want to mention to our listeners who are in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, that we will be speaking in person Wednesday, August 31st at the Women's Building. It's a fundraiser, a benefit for Taking Aim, and it's been prepared by Friends of Taking Aim. The Women's Building is at 3543 18th Street between Mission and Valencia Streets. It'll be from 7 to 10 p.m. And you can contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net or 707-552-9992 for more information. We're going to document and analyze the relationship between the foreign and domestic intelligence, the events of 9/11, the war on terror, and the economic problems of workers here in the United States, the London bombings, the footprints of state terror, That is Wednesday, August 31st. And if you're in the tri-state area of New York and you're looking for a vacation, come out here to the San Francisco Bay Area, and we'll see you on August 31st. Ralph?
We're going to examine next week not only the preparations for martial law in the United States and the testing in the city of New York of gas that is being disseminated throughout the subway system and the public areas of New York, but we're going to continue to look at the unraveling official fiction. Let me give you a highlight. Death in Stockwell, the unanswered question. This is the Observer on Sunday, August 14th. He wasn't wearing a heavy jacket. He used his car to get into the station. He did not vault the barrier. And now the police say there are no closed-circuit television pictures to reveal the truth. So why did plainclothes officers shoot young Jean-Charles de Menessis 7 times in the head? Indeed, brothers and sisters, every aspect of the story pertaining to this young Brazilian electrician was a lie, was a fabrication. And we will detail exactly what underlies the execution of Jean-Charles de Menessis when we return next week with Taking Aim.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The London Bombing, Unraveling the Fiction, will be up on our website, www.takingaim.info. I'd like to announce that there's also now a WBAI archive, and next week I'll give you the internet site for that. And you can reach us at Taking Aim at PacBell, that's PACBELL.net. We'll be with you next week.